Hello and welcome to Office Hours. I am in Tel Aviv, Israel. Flew over here for the Data Tel Aviv Summit. And these aren't the kinds of images that you probably associate with Tel Aviv, but I'm staying on the Mediterranean. I love coming here to this part of the world. It's funny, I've been here a few times now, and every time I come, I'm like, oh, I don't need to come again. I've seen enough. You know, I need to go see other parts of the world. And then every time I've gotten the chance to come back, I keep ending up coming back. So that's kind of fun. So before, just got finished with my breakfast. So figured before I go head out for the day, I'd go answer some of your SQL Server questions. So the first one that I'll go hit, the highest voted one, if you want to post questions, remember, go to the link in the video description. Highest voted one is from Manikandan. Manikandan asks, as Postgres being in, he says, being one among the RDBMS lane, I'm not sure if he means being first place or if he just means being one of the databases out there, because I would disagree that Postgres is in first place by any measure. Not saying the SQL Server's number one, but just seems like an odd thing to say there. He says, do you think that Postgres has more features and flexibility compared to SQL Server? My answer there would be no. I don't think that that really is the number one database in terms of features and flexibility. I'm not even sure what that means. What I would say is when you're choosing databases, think of the database that you're the most familiar with and you have the most knowledge of on a day-to-day basis, the ones that you're used to solving problems with, that's the one that you should focus on using. Don't pick databases, relational databases, based on theoretical differences between them. Use the instrument that you use the most often. Just like if you were a musician, let's say that you play the piano a lot. You wouldn't look at music and say, well, the next song that I do, I'm going to try to use guitars instead. I've never played guitars before, but I hear guitars sound pretty well. You know, that's just not how you choose instruments when you play music. If you'd like to learn the guitar, by all means, go for it. But that you don't choose them based on what you think you've heard is the best. Use the one that you're good at using. Next up, we have Pagination Wu. Pagination Wu asks, I just lost that dang question. Where did it go? Son of a gun. Hold on a second here. My page didn't quite. There it is. Pagination Wu says, hi, Brent. I use Ola Hallengren's script to update my stats nightly. Other than the time spent and the percent CPU used, is there a case where updating stats with full scan would be a bad thing? I'm fortunate in that I have a long maintenance window. If I have full time for full scans, wouldn't it be worth doing? Okay, so let me rephrase that as, what are the drawbacks of doing update statistics every night, regardless of sampling rate? And what you're doing is you're freeing the plan cache. When you update statistics, you're causing execution plans to be invalidated, which means you're running into parameter sniffing every single day. I don't know about you, but I don't want to come in first thing in the morning and have all my plans starting again from scratch. That's just a recipe for troubleshooting parameter sniffing problems. So when you do that, you're causing yourself emergencies rather than fixing them. So make sure that whatever changes you're making to the environment are actually solving problems instead of causing them. Nightly statistics updates are way more frequent than most shops need. Now, if you aren't ever facing any parameter sniffing issues, then sure, go ahead, knock yourself out. But then if you're also never facing any parameter sniffing issues, I wonder how much you need accurate statistics every single day. So I get suspicious about all of that. Next up in the highest voted list, let's see here. Next up we have Adza. Adza asks, I had the thought of creating a date table with all the dates from 2010 to 2070, and then my tables, I can store small int values instead of actual dates. What the what? This could be a huge date saver, 2 bytes versus 3 bytes. Is this smart or stupid? Adza, you're talking about saving one bite. And in order to do it, you would have to refactor every piece of code that touches that column to save one byte. Adza, I think you have too much free time on your hands. Adza, I think you probably should take a vacation. If you need to save one byte per row, check out compression. Compression will save you a lot more than that, and you don't have to refactor any code. So I'm a little suspicious on that one. Next up we have Eyes Without a Face. Eyes Without a Face asks, is there a portable version of the first responder kit? Our customers are mainly banks and they're not keen on installing stored procedures, not even in the first responder kit. So the first thing you can do is create them in TempDB. You can create real stored procedures in TempDB. And if you don't want to do that, what you can do is create temp stored procedures. So just like you create temp tables, you can create temp stored procedures. You can put a pound sign at the beginning of it, and then they're only visible inside your own session, just like regular temp tables. And so that's why I don't bother creating a separate version for it. If you want to do that, just go ahead and do that. Next up, we have Dawson from Dawson's Creek. That's a show that I've never watched, Dawson's Creek, I have to confess. Dawson says, do you have any clue why Microsoft suggests to use a Windows collation for new development work, but the default server collation is something else? So what you're really asking is, why does Microsoft advise you to do something that's not the default in SQL Server? The defaults in SQL Server are generally for a predictable installation from one version to the next. Sometimes the best practices of today isn't the same as the SQL Server defaults from 20 years ago. It takes a Herculean amount of work for Microsoft to change something about the defaults for SQL Server. So, whereas it's very easy for someone to say, this is a new best practice. So what I would ask is, if someone tells you that something is a best practice and it's not the default, ask them why it's a best practice. So go to whoever told you that and ask them rather than asking me. I just never get the chance to change collations on an existing server. Whatever the application was developed with, that's the collation that you have to stick with, because changing collations is such a giant pain in the rear on existing databases, so I just never bother with it. And I never get the chance to develop new applications either. Still Learning asks, hello Brent, as a development DBA, I've recently become increasingly frustrated with computed columns and their limitations. Should I advise the development teams to refrain from using them and do the computations in the app instead? Generally speaking, if you're going to do computations, they should always be done in the least expensive tier that supports that calculation. So in the case of, if you have the ability to do a computation in the app tier where you don't pay licensing on a per CPU core basis, you should absolutely do that computation in the app tier rather than spending $2,000 a core for SQL Server to do it in Standard Edition or $7,000 a core to do it in Enterprise Edition. I would tell you that same thing even if SQL Server's computed columns didn't have any limitations. For example, the order by part of queries, there are a few limitations with that in SQL Server, but I still tell people, if you're going to do an order by and there isn't a top in the query, you should do that order by in the application tier where there's no charge for CPU. Next up, Haroon asks, what are the pros and cons of installing Ola Hallengren's maintenance scripts in the master database versus some kinds of maintenance database? So I just personally, anytime I have any utility scripts, I always put them in the master database. It's easy that way to call them from any database that you have. The reason why you'll sometimes hear people say, never install things in master. There are a few reasons. One is that people are worried that they won't be able to restore the master database. I don't restore the master database. But that's okay, because if it's just utility scripts, it's not like I need to keep those. It's not like I can't just recreate them in a matter of seconds from my list of scripts. Another reason is you may not have access to the master database when you use platforms, for example, like Amazon RDS may not let you install things in master, Azure SQL DB. So that's why sometimes folks will just put them in a database instead. I just always use master. And then we'll take one more. Melinda asks, "Hi, Brent. Thanks for your time. Whoops. During execution of certain queries or stored procedures, I'm observing high logical reads. Where should I look to make sure it's appropriate or required improvement? Unfortunately, I haven't completed all the training modules, and I'm asking this question." Melind, so let me rephrase your question. I bought training, and I haven't finished it yet, and I want to know how to do what's described in the training. Gosh, let's think about that for a second. So there's training, and you haven't watched it, and you haven't learned to do what's in the training. Wonder if there's a way we could fix that. I guess we'll never know. What do you think I do the training classes for, Melinda? It's not, you can't just learn by absorbing things. And in fact, that question is so bad that we're going to do another one. I can't even believe the people upvoted that. Maybe they upvoted that because they knew I was going to roast the person for doing that. Okay, so we'll do one more. The curious one asks, "Hi, Brent. If you have to work with local solid-state drives for your SQL server setup, is it better to have one big array with logical separation done by the operating system or physical separation by setting up smaller disk sets? Generally one large volume done with RAID 5 or RAID 10 as opposed to a bunch of individual volumes. Because if you do a bunch of individual volumes, you don't know how much performance you need from each of those individual volumes. And you're just limiting every single one of them. Whereas if you put them all in one big pool, then they can burst and use the capacity for the whole entire array instead of just two drives. And I'll give you an example. When you do inserts, updates, and deletes, those need to hit the transaction log file first. Then, later, asynchronously, they will be written to the data files. But you don't need that throughput on both of those at the same time. The log file hits once, and then the data file hits again later. Why not have one big set of drives so that if you have a quick burst of inserts, the log file isn't just hammered down to two individual drives and the data file hammered down into two drives? All right, there we go. That's probably a good set of questions for us to go tackle. I'll stop taking questions there. Time for me to go out and go walk around downtown Tel Aviv and do some browsing. And I was going to say do some eating, but I just got done eating. It's almost noon. It's almost time to do drinking. Woohoo! Tomorrow I teach my running SQL Server in the Cloud workshop at Data Tel Aviv. It's an all-day class that I'm doing for the first time publicly. And then depending on how that goes, I'm going to make whatever adjustments that I want to that material. And then I will teach the class online as well. This is going to be one of the first only recorded classes that I've done. I'll just record it from my home studio and then put it up for sale over on brentozar.com. So I will work on that when I get back to the States. But for now, I'm going to go enjoy this beautiful weather here in Tel Aviv. And I will see y'all at the next Office Hours. Adios.